White Network presents the International Jew Study Hour. Reading and commentary on Henry Ford's great classic about Jewish power in America.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and students of the International Jew. Tonight is May 30th, 2013, and we are completing last week's chapter 43, The Jews and the Religious Persecution Cry, before we move on to chapter 44. I'm Carolyn Yeager, and
I'm Hadding Scott.
And I guess we need to do a real brief summary, Hadding, since we're in the middle of we're almost finished with this chapter. And basically, I'm only going to say that it's about how Jews are against everything and anything that is Christian. And they point out that, you know, all the objections they have to Sunday being recognized day of rest in the United States. And they were always trying to open up businesses and have public business being done, while at the same time, they were trying to discourage things being done on their Jewish Saturday Sabbath, like jury duty and all kinds of things. And they were even, they're against the YMCA, they pointed out, Salvation Army, the song Onward Christian Soldiers, anything that has anything to do with Christianity, which they call Christological, and said that it didn't belong anywhere in the United States political arena or in the civic arena, social arena, whatever, because there were these Jews who couldn't participate in that. And that's about it, and that's where we left off. You know, I don't know what you figured out, but I thought that where you stopped was good, but maybe you should go back to that, do that whole that little paragraph again.
Okay.
And then we'll finish.
All right.
Folks, this is chapter 44.
And so, when they said, reading the Bible is sheer proselytizing, it isn't fair, the non-Jew, who wanted to prove that he is fair and unprejudiced above all things else, a weakness the Jew knows well how to manipulate, said, well, then out goes the Bible. And it went out. Very well, what next? You must abolish Christmas, too. You must not keep Easter. The Jews don't like it. It is anti-Semitic to observe Good Friday. In other words, to please the sensitive Jewish natures, we must eradicate from Christian civilization all that is Christian in it. In the meantime, what transpires, having induced fair-minded non-Jews to do all these things, and everyone above enumerated has been done over and over at Jewish demand, the Jews then proceeded to sow Judaism on the fields thus denuded of Christianity. No religion in the institutions of the state. Yet in every state university last year there were, and in every state university this year there probably will be, courses of lectures delivered by Jewish rabbis. The lectures delivered in the colleges themselves, propagandizing the youth of the non-Jews with Judaistic religion, ethics, and economics. That is what the so-called Jewish Chautauqua exists for. It is not a Jewish Chautauqua. It is Jewish propaganda in public educational institutions.
I don't know what the Chautauqua was. I failed to look that up. But, that has all evolved into Jewish studies programs in every one of our, practically, universities. And the big ones were the ones that got it first. And there, Hebrew is taught, and Jewish history, ideas, beliefs, everything in the most positive way. And they encourage, of course, mostly Jews take these courses, but they encourage non-Jews, and a lot of stupid non-Jews go and take them too.
You know, you want to know something funny? They have Jewish studies in Germany too, but in Germany, it's not really just Jewish propaganda. They really are studying the Jews, just sort of like Eichmann. That woman, I can't remember her name right now, but she wrote Flashpoint. She was an expert in Jewish studies, or she had taken Jewish studies.
And they study Eichmann?
No. Eichmann was an expert on Jews.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm saying.
And he was, I'm a little confused, sorry.
Yeah, I'm saying that Jewish studies in Germany today really are studies about the Jews. It's not just propaganda.
Okay. And they really are, they seriously do it. They're not being driven out or anything.
That's right.
Yeah, well, that has kind of a history, I think.
Ingrid Veckert. She took Jewish studies.
Okay.
And then she wrote Flashpoint, explaining how the Jews were responsible for Kristallnacht.
Well, that's interesting. Of course, I like her. She's good.
That is the repayment the Jews have made for our fair-mindedness. Their demand for complete secularization is merely their preparation of the soil for their carefully organized sowing of the seed of Judaism. And non-Jews permit it to continue, for there is nothing they fear so much as that their opposition will be regarded as religious prejudice. The Jew glories in religious prejudice, as the American glories in patriotism. Religious prejudice is the Jews' chief expression of their own true patriotism. It is the only well-organized, active, and successful form of religious prejudice in the country, because they have succeeded in pulling off the gigantic trick of making not their own attitude, but any opposition to it, bear the stigma of prejudice and persecution. That is why the Jew uses these terms so frequently. He wants to label the other fellow first. That is why any investigation of the Jewish question is so quickly advertised as anti-Semitism. The Jew knows the advantage of labeling the other man. Wrong labels are most useful. This does not by any means exhaust the list of headlines describing the various avenues in which the expression of virulent Jewish religious prejudice and persecution is found, but it exhausts the space allotted to these articles each week. Therefore, the subject will be concluded next week. It is not a pleasant subject. Religious prejudice is just as unpleasant to write about as it is to experience in any other way. It is totally contrary to the genius of the American and the Anglo-Saxon. We have always regarded religion as a matter of conscience. To believe as he will is part of every man's fundamental liberty. To interfere with force to change anyone's belief is exceedingly stupid. Holding these hereditary principles, one chooses to study that active stream of influence in American life, which is known as the Jewish stream. And immediately upon doing so, one finds himself classed with the bigots and torturers of other times. It is now time to show that the cry of bigot is raised mostly by bigots. There is a religious prejudice in this country. There is, indeed, a religious persecution. There is a forcible shoving aside of the religious liberties of a majority of the people. And this prejudice and persecution and use of force is Jewish and nothing but Jewish. This is the answer to the cry of religious persecution, and we shall make it so complete and definite that a repetition of the cry against students of the Jewish question will automatically mark the criers as either too ignorant or too vicious for consideration.
All right. Well, that's the end of the chapter. 4th June, 1921. So now we go on to the next one.
Yes, chapter 44. Are the Jews victims or persecutors?
Yeah, and now we have a bunch of editorial comments that start out this chapter. There's quite a few of them. So they're like quotes, right?
Yes. Here's a quote. Half of Christendom worships a Jew. The other half worships a Jewess. Jewish editorial. If the gospel story is correct, Judas was a pretty decent sort of fellow. It was only after he had become a convert to Christianity that he became that which has made his memory an accursed thing for 1900 years. Jewish editorial. Our land is frequently called a Christian nation. No doubt the majority of our citizens believe this. No less an authority than Justice Brewer of the Supreme Court so expressed himself in 1892. But the statement is clearly false. This is not a Christian nation. In inspiration, at least, it is a Hebrew nation. For the Constitution, which we now enjoy, traces back to the Hebrew Commonwealth. Jewish editorial.
Now, this one I thought was just outrageous. And now these are things written in Jewish newspapers of the time. And so most people didn't read the Jewish newspapers, but the Jews did. And so the Jews were getting these messages. And this to me is another example of how what is not a good terminology, but I'm using it, of the conspiratorial aspect of Jewish domination works, you know, that they were constantly being taught these things and told these things in their newspapers and in reinforcing these beliefs. That this is not, that they have the right to say that this, well, they're such a small little minority, they should never have been allowed in, I swear. That this is not a Christian nation, that it's a Hebrew nation and stuff like that. And there's more of this, but it's shocking.
All right. From the minutes of a meeting of the Committee on Families of the New York Board of Child Welfare, Mr. Hebbard, that is one of the things that I have in mind, that a widow brings deliberately into her home a nameless child, and the inevitable consequence of that is that her legitimate children are always thereafter pointed out. Miss Sophie Irene Loeb. You want to do that one?
Oh, God. You didn't give me any time to prepare. As far as nameless children are concerned, Christ himself was a nameless child. Let us get away from nameless children.
Mr. Dirvach. I think where there are three or four children in a home and a little stranger enters that home without a father, you are corrupting the morals of those legitimate children by permitting them to remain in such surroundings, Miss Loeb.
I say to you that this committee, if it takes such an attitude as that, is 100 years behind the times.
Mr. Cunyon. Anything against purity is immoral, Miss Loeb.
What has that to do with the question of purity? Was the mother of Christ pure?
Mr. Cunyon. Certainly, Miss Loeb.
He had no name.
Mr. Cunyon, you can't bring that in here. We believe he was conceived without sin. Mr. Menahan to Miss Loeb, that is very wrong to make that statement. Cited in letter of complaint to Mayor Hyland.
Well, that's pretty outrageous, too.
Yeah.
Brother.
Okay, here's another Jewish editorial. And get my computer to respond. Okay. The intimate The intimate relation of church and state in the great non-sectarian United States of America received direct demonstration on August 12, 1913, when a deputy sergeant at arms of the Senate was hurriedly sent out to get a preacher of any old denomination to open the Senate with prayer. The session opening an hour earlier than usual, the regular chaplain was not at hand, but with still 2 minutes to spare, the deputy returned in an automobile, hurried to the vice president's office, and introduced the Reverend Dr. C. Albert Homus of Canonsburg, Pennsylvania, to Mr. Marshall, just in time for the vice president to lead the way into the Senate chamber to open the session at 11 o'clock. And once again, the Union was saved. We shudder to think what might have happened if no preacher had been captured in time to open the session with prayer. Jewish editorial.
Well, there they're making fun of the desire to open the sessions of, was this Congress or something, with prayer. You know, just making
fun. Senate, probably.
Senate. Okay.
Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. I guess I'll continue.
Yes, please.
Another Jewish editorial. President Wilson, in his inaugural address, said, "The firm basis of the government is justice, not pity. This is sound Jewish doctrine as laid down by Moses and the prophets, in contradistinction to the doctrine of love as attributed to Jesus. This coming from so good a churchman as President Wilson might be a little surprising, were it not that it is a well-known fact that whenever our Christian brethren want to talk to reasoning men, they go to the Old Testament for their inspiration." Jewish editorial.
Boy, now just to reinforce here, all Wilson said was the firm basis of the government is justice, not pity, which, you know, is makes sense. But they go on and create all this other stuff about it, saying that, you know, it's not about that. Christianity is about love, and actually it's the Jews who are asking for pity all the time for themselves. But this is the way they twist things around. Okay.
Yeah, well, it's not really true that Christians always go to the Old Testament for reason. Plato and Aristotle were very important within the Catholic tradition anyway.
Well, that's right. They don't. They're just bragging about things that they have no basis for.
Okay, more Jewish editorials. President Wilson at his inaugural gave another instance of the well-known fact that in solemn moments when they need comfort and inspiration, Christians turn to the Old Testament and not to the New. So President Wilson, when he kissed the Bible after taking the inaugural oath, selected the passage, Psalm 46. Jewish editorial. Reference has frequently been made in these columns to a number of addresses made by the late Isaac M. Wise at the celebration in honor of his 80th birthday anniversary, in the course of which he predicted that in a quarter of a century from that date, 1899, there would be practically nothing left in Protestant Christianity of a belief in the divinity of Jesus Christ or the distinctive dogmas of Christianity, and that all Protestant Christians, by whatever name they called themselves, would be substantially Jews in belief. To anyone who notes the signs of the times, it is apparent that this prophecy is being rapidly fulfilled. The Jesus superstition and the fantastic dogmas built upon his supposed divine origin die but slowly, but that they are dying is nevertheless apparent. Jewish editorial.
You know, this Isaac M. Wise, I think, was the father of Stephen Wise.
Possibly.
But, you know, that would be 1924, they're talking about, 1925 or so, that there would be nothing left of Protestant Christianity. Well, maybe it's partly true. although it's really not true of all Protestant Christianity at all. But, well, that's what they're hoping for. You know, it's like, it's so interesting that from the start, they were pushing to change this country into something in their own image.
Mm-hmm.
Is it not? Yeah. Okay.
The subject of this article is religious prejudice and persecution. Are the Jews victims or persecutors? A study of history and of contemporary Jewish journalism shows that Jewish prejudice and persecution is a continuous phenomenon wherever the Jews have attained power, and that in neither action nor word has any disability placed upon the Jew equaled the disabilities he has placed and still contemplates placing upon non-Jews. It is a rather startling reversal of all that we have learned from our Judaized histories, but nevertheless it seems to be the truth. Attention is once more called to the fact that the Jews themselves are not raising the cry of religious persecution, here or elsewhere, but they are allowing their Gentile fronts to do it for them, just as they have not denied the statements made in this series. Among themselves, they freely admit most of them, but let Gentile fronts do it for them. The Jews would not be averse to raising the cry of religious persecution, perhaps, provided they could make it stand. Were they not afraid that it would call attention to their own persecuting activities? But their Gentile fronts have brought that upon them. There is no Christian church that the Jews have not repeatedly attacked. They have attacked the Catholic Church. This is of special interest just now, when Jewish agents are doing their utmost to arouse Catholic sentiment in their favor by circulating charges which these agents personally know to be false. The Dearborn Independent has perfect confidence in the information which Catholic leaders may have on the Jewish question. On this subject, the Catholic priesthood is not misled. Examples of this attack are numerous. Half of Christendom worships a Jewess is not a statement but a slur flung by Jewish men who say in the ritual morning prayer, "Blessed art thou, O Lord our God, King of the universe, who hast not made me a woman." The Talmudists' discussions of the Virgin Mother are often vile. The Christian festivals, whose preservation is due to the Catholic custom and conscience, are all attacked by the Jews. The American Israelite, whose great prestige in American Jewry is due to its having been founded by Rabbi Isaac S. M. Wise, opposed the establishment of Columbus Day and berated Governor Hughes for signing the law making it a holiday in New York. The act that established it deserved the contempt of thinking men. Why? Is not the discovery of America a memorable event? Yes, but Columbus was a Catholic. However, in recent months, the Jews are proving him to have been a Jew. So we may expect some day to see Columbus Day insisted upon with Jewish rites. The Catholic Columbian made editorial reference to the increasing Jewish influence on the American press in these words, "Jewry is getting its grip on the news of this country as it is on Reuters and the Havas Agency in Europe." A perfectly polite and true observation. But the Jewish editorial thunderer came back. Oh, wait a minute. That last observation. That was the Catholic Columbian.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Right.
I apologize to the Catholic Columbian for that voice. But the Jewish editorial thunderer came back. The Columbian, in its sneaking Jesuitical way, does not mention the fact that these Jewish papers are the very cleanest in the country. The Columbian cannot point to a single daily owned by one of its co-religionists that begins to compare with the above papers.
You know, I just love that. I don't love it. I love it not. That they say the Columbian in its sneaking Jesuitical way is really, how bad can these people be? This is a Jewish paper, writing and just acting so thundering back. Oh, how can they dare say that, you know, that Jews are getting a grip on the news of the country with these news agencies? That's a sneaking Jesuitical way of talking. Man, you know, they are really horrible.
Yeah, funny thing is the Jesuits were founded by Jewish converts.
Well, that's what it said all the time, but they must not have known that.
The sweet spirit here evidenced is very significant today when an appeal is being made to create a strong pro-Jewish Catholic sentiment. A strong pro-Jewish Catholic sentiment.
Mm-hmm.
If there is in the world any extra ecclesiastical undertaking by Catholics which has won the undivided approval of the Christian world, as the Passion Play of Oberammergau has done, the present writer does not know what it is. Yet, in a volume entitled A Rabbi's Impressions of the Oberammergau Passion Play, Rabbi Joseph Krauskopf, Doctor of Divinity of Philadelphia, has stigmatized that notable production as reeking with falsehoods and vicious anti-Semitism. In the rabbi's eyes, of course, it is, for to him, the entire Christian tradition is a poisonous lie. The whole fabric of Christian truth, especially as it concerns the person of Christ, are the hallucinations of emotional men and hysterical women. Thus, says the rabbi, was invented that cruel story that has caused more misery, more innocent suffering than any other work of fiction in the range of the whole world's literature. And thus the simple peasants of Oberammergau, presenting the Catholic faith in reverent pageant, are labeled anti-Semites.
You know, they've still continued working on that Oberammergau, a passion play, past this time. I mean, even a few years ago, I was reading something, and I talked about it too, I think, and it might even have been Abe Foxman, but it seems like it must have been somebody else, but he was involved in it, where they were still changing, trying to force these people, these Catholics, to change the dialogue of the play, which was biblical, because it offended them as Jews. And they got some more changes made. I just don't know why. I think what I was going on and on about was why we give in to these people. But these poor Catholics and Christians, they keep doing it. But, you know, this was a noted, I don't care what you think about, the Passion, whether it's real or not, but it was a noted cultural institution for so long, and they've just destroyed it. You know, the Jews, it still goes on, but they've constantly making changes in it. And I just think that the way they got away with talking back in those days, it just amazes me. You think it, you know, at that time people would have, you know, they wouldn't have dared to talk that way, but they did. They always have. Okay. Truth is. Okay.
These are not isolated instances. Antagonism to the Catholic Church runs throughout Jewish literature. The Jewish attitude was summed up in an editorial in the Jewish Sentinel of November 26, 1920, as follows. Our only great historical enemy, our most dangerous enemy, is Rome in all its shapes and forms, and in all its ramifications. Whenever the sun of Rome begins to set, that of Jerusalem rises. These, however, are matters well known to Catholic leaders. In their turn, the other Christian denominations have been attacked. When the Methodist Church put on the great pageant entitled The Wayfarer, Rabbi Stephen S. Wise played critic and made the solemn and silly statement that had he been a South Sea Islander instead of the itinerant platform performer which he is, his first impulse after seeing the Wayfarer would have been to rush out into the street and kill at least three Jews. It says a great deal, perhaps, for the channel in which Rabbi Wise's impulses run, but the tens of thousands of Methodists who saw the Wayfarer will not be inclined to attribute such a criticism to the spirit of tolerance which Rabbi Wise so zealously counsels to the Christians to observe. The Episcopal Church also has felt the attack of the Jews. Recently, the Jewish press raised a clamor that the Episcopal Church was not competent to teach Americanism in our cities because it held that Christianity and good citizenship were synonymous. And when the Episcopal Church made provision for mission work among the Jews, the torrent of abuse that poured out gave a very vivid picture of what the Jewish mind naturally turns to when aroused. This abuse is not reproduced here because of its excessive violence and disrespect. It is similar to that which is heaped upon all attempts to explain Christianity to the Jews. What would the Gentiles do if we sent missionaries to them? Ask the violent editors. Any Gentile can answer that. Nay, even the Jews themselves can answer that. In the first place, the Jews do not want to teach their religion to Gentiles because there is a Talmudical restriction against it. Talmudically, the Gentiles are not good enough to mingle with the religious matters of the Jews. In the second place, the Jews do send missionaries everywhere, not to spread Jewish religious principles, but propaganda favoring the Jews as a race and people, as is done in our colleges through the so-called Jewish Chautauqua. In the third place, let there be produced one Jewish missionary who has ever received anything but a considerate reception wherever he has appeared. The Jews are bitter against all Christian denominations because of the conversion of numerous Jews to them. A large number of Jews have become Catholics. One of the Knights of the Columbus most useful lecturers against the menace of radical socialism is a converted Jew. It is also with the Presbyterian Church, which has been the most recent victim of Jewish vituperation. But only upon the Catholic Church has the Jew poured more wrath and malediction than he has poured upon Christian Science. The Christian Science Church has attracted large numbers of Jewish converts. Some of them have become very active, devoted members of that form of faith. Scores of columns and pages have been devoted to their denunciation in Jewish newspapers, magazines, and books. Christian Science is a peculiar anathema to the Jew. Where, then, is the religious prejudice? Search through the publications of all the churches named, and you cannot find in all their history so much of the spirit of prejudice and persecution as you can find expressed in the Jewish press in one single day. Jewry reeks with such prejudice. In politics, education, social functions, public holidays, literature and newspapers, they see everywhere traces of Christological manifestations and cry them down.
Okay, here, I just looked up the Jewish Chautauqua Society, and it was conceived and founded in 1593 by a chancellor, Henry Berkowitz, a Jew of Philadelphia, and modeled after some other thing in New York. Anyway, it's basically an interfaith education program of the men of Reform Judaism. It's nonprofit. It defines its mission as seeking the dissemination of knowledge of the Jewish religion by fostering the study of its history and literature, you know, giving popular courses of instruction, issuing publications, having reading circles, holding general assemblies and other things. And so obviously it still exists. And, you know, it just promotes the Jewish religion, and they tried to install it. There's a big article on Hillel website about it, but I'm looking at Wikipedia. But, you know, they've installed it, and they just another way that they propagate their religious beliefs. Such hypocrites. Okay.
Well, the gist of Reform Judaism seems to be to make Jews appear to be not too different from the rest of the population. So I suppose that they're continuing that agenda with Chautauqua.
Well, yeah, they just want to make people, you know, tell people what they're all about and what Judaism is all about. And, you know, probably, yes, make it more accessible in understanding than maybe some of the more fundamentalist Jews don't want anybody, you know, don't want non-Jews to know anything about them.
No public man has ever given public evidence of his Christian faith without rebuke from the Jews. Mr. Bryan, Mr. Marshall, Mr. Taft, Mr. Wilson, two of them presidents, one of them vice president, and the other secretary of state, have all been called to task from time to time for their sins in this respect. Mr. Marshall, this means Thomas Marshall, he was Woodrow Wilson's vice president.
Okay.
Mr. Marshall is a devout man whose faith is real to him, and he speaks very naturally about it at times. He has, therefore, been attacked oftener in the Jewish press than has any other public man of recent times. Nothing is more ludicrous to the Jewish press than a vice president of the United States openly confessing that he is an idolater, that is, a worshiper of the dead Jewish impostor, whom the Christians ignorantly call Christ.
You know, this is just too close, though, to what the anti-Christian white people accuse of Christians. So, you know, it's like they're on the side of the Jews. I know they have a different reason for it, but well, in a sense it's the same reason to get rid of it, but it's kind of right on the money there, isn't it, Hadding? I mean, you have to notice that. I notice that every time I see these things. I notice it.
But well, I don't think that critics like Will Williams are complaining that Christianity is idolatry or a perversion of Judaism. They're complaining that it has anything to do with Jews.
No, but they say that it's foolish, like the Jews will say about it, and that it's a worshiper worshiping a dead Jewish imposter. They agree with that.
I don't think that the criticism of Christianity from people who believe in science is at all the same.
Well, a lot of criticism. It is. A lot of it is. I've heard Will Williams talking about it, and it's quite offensive in this way. So that's just, you know, that's how excited they get. And they're all over the place, these people. They're all over the place. You run into it, and they're very offensive about it. Just as offensive as the Jews, which is kind of, you know, just something to be noted.
It offends your Christian faith?
It offends my feeling for the people who are Christians, and I don't think it should, and that fact that Christianity is the religion, has been the traditional religion of the white race for a long time, and of Europe and so on, and I don't think it should be talked about that way at all. And I don't think we're better off without it either, as I've said myself. So, so I think it's damaging, yeah.
Well, see, the thing is, though, that Christianity used to be not, the scripture of Christianity used to be not taken so seriously.
Well, what you have left after the Jews have attacked all Christian churches and succeeded, except what's left are the Baptists and people like that, you know, people even further gone than the Baptists. So what you have is these Bible people that really cling to the Bible, and that's what you have mostly now in the Christian faithful. And the others are so far gone into liberalism and so on. And just like the Jews say here, they become more Hebrew or more, you know, more Judaic or something than they are Christian today. So, but I'm not, you know, I can't speak with any great authority.
Well, I think Christianity today is certainly not the institution that it was a century ago, nowhere near.
No, and who's responsible for that?
It's largely a result of science.
Oh, I don't think so. You know, you can separate religion and science. People can be religious and hold their faith, and even though they know that science exists, and some of this might not be, you know, quite like that, but, you know, it still has meaning for them. I just don't think, I think it's Jews and all those non-Jews who have joined in.
Well, I tell you another aspect to it. The way that Christians have tried to bolster their religion by becoming biblical literalists doesn't help, because nobody with common sense can take the Bible literally. See, that's one of the ways that Christianity has survived in Europe, is that they don't take the Bible literally. They regard people who take the Bible literally as kooks, but that's pretty much mainstream here.
They try to take the Bible literally. Well, it's mainstream only amongst those certain large denominations like the Baptists and so on. But yeah, the Catholic Church did not, and the Catholic Church was the strongest upholder of against the Jews, and unfortunately, you know, they've been destroyed, and our own people have helped them do that. So I just still think so. But anyway.
To Mr. Marshall's honor, be it said, he never apologized. He never begged to withdraw his public statements. Neither did William Jennings Bryan, whose lecture, The Prince of Peace, contained statements in honor of Christ, which brought him into conflict with Jewish spokesmen everywhere, and whose remarks about missions after a trip around the world were savagely attacked by Jews. Mr. Bryan did not apologize either. Mr. Taft was promptly called down on several occasions for using forms of the word Christian, which were particularly offensive to the Jewish press because they had advertised far and wide during the Taft campaign that Mr. Taft was practically a Jew in his belief, in that he had abandoned all the distinctive Christian doctrines pertaining to Christ. After his lapses, in which he used the term Christian approvingly, it was explained on his behalf, one, that he was accommodating himself to the audience, and two, that he used the term as a synonym for civilization. But isn't it significant that the name of Christ should be an integral part of the very name of the highest civilization? Mr. Taft was a true liberal, liberal enough to tolerate Christian orthodoxy. And that was a rather weak spot so far as the Jews' estimate of him went. Mr. Wilson, while president, was very close to the Jews. His administration, as everyone knows, was predominantly Jewish. As a Presbyterian elder, Mr. Wilson had occasional lapses into the Christian mode of thought during his public utterances, and was always checked up tight by his Jewish censors. In 1914, speaking before the American University at Washington, he said, "That is the reason why scholarship has usually been most fruitful when associated with religion, and scholarship has never been, so far as I can at this moment recall, associated with any religion except the religion of Jesus Christ." That was terrible. So terrible that Herman Bernstein was chosen to administer the castigation. And Mr. Wilson made the reparation. "My dear Mr. Bernstein, I am sorry that there should have been any unfair implication in what I said at the opening of the American University. You may be sure that there was nothing of the kind in my mind, or very certainly nothing in my thoughts that would discriminate in the important matter you speak of against Judaism. I find that one of the risks and penalties of extemporaneous speaking is that you do not stop to consider the whole field, but address yourself merely to the matter in hand. With sincere respects and appreciation, cordially yours, Woodrow Wilson."
Total diplomacy there, right?
Yeah. The heading given this notice in the Jewish press was, "He did not mean it." All of the president's offending took place in 1914. The second offense he gave was by taking the position of honorary chairman of the International Lord's Day Congress, which was to be held the next year in connection with the Panama Exposition. It was, however, the Christian Sunday which received the bulk of the abuse on that occasion. The subject is religious prejudice. Where does it exist in this country in more continuous and virulent character than among the Jews? Read these items selected at random from Jewish newspapers. District Grand Lodge No. 4, Independent Order, B'nai B'rith, voted at the annual election held in San Francisco, March 2, 1911, to exclude from the order Jews who joined the Christian Science Church. The body of earnest discussion decided that the portals of the order shall be closed against the Christian Scientist Jews on the ground that such Jews have abjured Judaism. The vote upon the question was almost unanimous.
Well, Hadding, how do you think about the Christian Science Church and science? Does the Christian Science Church come closer to science?
Well, I only have a slight knowledge of Christian Science that was founded by Mary Baker Eddy in the 19th century. They believe in faith healing.
Well, I know quite a bit about it. Well, I went to a Sunday school with my Christian Science.
I think Christian Science is science in the same way that creation the science is science.
It tries to put everything on scientific principles. Yeah. I know. You're right. Basically, it's not the same kind of science, but it is a little more scientific in its approach.
Okay, sure. Next time you get an infection, don't take any penicillin. Yeah, that'll work. The Jewish community at Philadelphia has found it necessary to publish a warning to the Jewish people against the daily vacation Bible schools, which are being established in various parts of the city, also against certain missions and settlement houses, all of which are traps into which Jewish children are decoyed for the purpose of seducing them from the religion of their parents. These institutions belong to that class of conversionist agencies which wage a campaign for the seeking of converts through workers who are a class of criminals that keep just within the law and deserve no better treatment than is usually accorded to people of that kind. When a bishop of the Episcopal Church said, "We must make the United States indisputably a Christian nation," the Jewish press reported that such a thing could not be done until the Constitution of the United States had been abolished. Christian America is a persecuting term, according to the professional Jewish spokesman, and the most laborious efforts have been put forth by them to prove on paper that the United States is not and cannot be Christian.
Yep.
Not only do the Jews disagree with Christian teaching, which is their perfect right, and no one dare question it, but they seek to interfere with it. It is not religious tolerance in the midst of religious difference, but religious attack that they preach and practice. The whole record of the Jewish opposition to Christmas, Easter, and certain patriotic songs shows that. When Cleveland and Lakewood arranged for a community Christmas, the Cleveland Jewish Press said, "The writer of this has no idea how many Jews there are in Lakewood, but if there is only one, there should be no community Christmas, no community religion of any kind." That is not a council of tolerance, it is a council of attack. The Christmas literature of American Judaism is fiercer than the flames of the Inquisition. In the month of January, the Jewish press has urged its readers to begin an early campaign against Christmas celebrations the next Christmas. "Only 360 days before Christmas, so let us do our Christmas arguing early and take plenty of time to do it."
You know, the organization, ACLU, seems to hold the position that it is correct, legally correct, that if there's only one Jew in a city like in Lakewood here, he's using this example, there's only one, there should be still be no community Christmas because this Jew can't participate. Is that nuts or what? And yet, is this backed up by the Constitution? Is this somehow backed up by the law of our land?
Well, it doesn't reflect the Constitution as originally written, but I believe it is consistent with the 14th Amendment.
Which said what? Which said there's no discrimination.
Which said that citizens of the United States had privileges and immunities that the states could not deny. And the Constitution as originally written says that the federal government may not make any law respecting religion. And the 14th Amendment brings that restriction down to the states and lower governments, I believe. And
okay, I can see.
Yeah, so basically no government anywhere within the United States now under the 14th Amendment is allowed to make any law respecting religion. This is the 14th Amendment.
Well, okay, there's no... Now, you know, I don't see how this fits where people in a community celebrated Christmas. If this Jew was forced to come to the celebration and sing songs and, you know, do things, then that would be one thing. But they're not forced. So it's just saying, but the others have a right to do it. I can't see how that would be, how they can hold that, you know, legally binding at all. But they seem to be doing it.
Well, the 14th Amendment is crazy. You know, it's the same one that says that anybody born on this side of the Mexican border is a U.S. citizen, right?
Well, right. Yeah, I mean, I know it's got all that stuff in it. But just speaking about what they're writing about here, I can't see how you can prevent people from celebrating something because some other people in the community don't celebrate it. Okay, you can't prevent them from celebrating, like in churches or whatever, but I guess they can prevent the government of the community.
That's right.
From doing it. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. The upside to that is if you're a student in a state university, you're protected by the First Amendment from the university. So there's at least an upside to it.
Yeah.
Because of the 14th Amendment. If anything, Easter is attacked yet more bitterly. But we refrain for good reasons from repeating what Jews commonly say on such occasions. The strange inconsistency of it all is to see the great department stores of the Levies and the Isaacs and the Goldsteins and the Silvermans filled with brilliant Christmas cheer, and at Easter with the goods appropriate to the time. The festivals of the heathen are very profitable. Jewish merchants have been chided for this, not overly severely, by certain rabbis. But on the whole, the rabbis had better remain content, for there are no forces more rapidly secularizing the two festival days than are the merchandising and profiteering forces. Even religious intolerance has its gleesome moments, and the Jews come whenever the signs appear of the greater secularization of the church. One parallel between the protocols and the real hopes of the Jews is written in the common Jewish prophecy that Christianity is doomed to perish. It will perish by becoming, to all intents and purposes, Judaism. And it will become Judaism first by ousting all the doctrines pertaining to the persons of Christ, excising from the Gospels the great I Ams, which are his distinctive teachings concerning himself. And second, by devitalizing Christianity of all the spiritual content which flows from a union by faith with a person believed to be divine. That is the only way it can be done. There may be a union of all the churches of the Christian faith because the fundamentals are the same. No union of Christianity and Judaism can occur unless Judaism takes in Jesus as the Messiah, or unless Christianity ejects him as the Messiah. Judaism sees the union coming by the ejection of the Lord as the Messiah and rejoices at every sign of it. Dr. Charles F. Aked, who has since blossomed out as a Jewish spokesman, delivered a sermon in which he cast aside all the supernatural elements in the life of Christ, from his birth to the significance of his death, and was hailed by the Jewish press as the fulfillment of the prophecy that within 50 years the religion of all the American people outside the Catholic Church would be Judaism in principle, even though not in name.
See, now here up above it said that that, you know, that what could kill Christianity would be the excising of the spiritual content of a union by faith with a person believed to be divine. Now, people might think that this is not scientific and so on, people aren't divine and so on, but yet this is something, this is what religion is all about. I don't care what religion it is, if it's real religion, it's all about things that are beyond, transcend, you know, our normal world. And if somebody wants to feel this union with a person who is, a very special and believe them to be divine, that's powerful. It's powerful in there. It gives that person a whole lot. So I don't see any reason to criticize that, even if you don't or I don't do that anymore. But, we're just about out of time, ladies and gentlemen. We'll continue this next week. So what do you want to say at the end, Hattie?
Well, I didn't really have anything particularly to say.
Okay. Well, I got that in, and we've just got a few more paragraphs of this chapter. So once again, we'll finish it next week and go on to the next one. Good night, and see you then.
Thanks for listening. The International Jew Study Hour will return next week, exclusively on the White Network.